Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two awesome sponsors this week. One is the 2013 CSS DevConf. That's literally the URL, 2013.cssdevconf.com. The call for speakers is still open, so if it's your dream in life to speak at a CSS-oriented conference and you have a good idea, go there, click the big blue button that says Submit Session, and put in your session, or if you just want to go and hang out in the Rocky Mountains and listen to a bunch of CSS nerds talk about CSS, that sounds like a good time to me. Check it out at 2013.cssdevconf.com. And lynda.com. Go to lynda.com/shoptalk. If you've never signed up before, you get a free week just by using that URL, and they have tons of learning material on lynda.com. We'll tell you more about that later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
To the Coast to Coast podcast with the most Shop Talk, a sound effects podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Shop Talk Show. We have our guest this week, a normal episode, back, right, good, Ben Frain. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm looking at our notes. And it's just, you follow the same like naming pattern that I do, which I like, where all of your empire is just your name. It's just yourname.com. It's at Ben Frain.
I'm a simple man, and it's a complicated name, so it makes it easy.
Yep. How do people mispronounce it? Did I, or did I get it right?
No. I suppose frame, as if it's a picture frame. That's about the only one I get.
Yeah, good. That's a quality name then. About a year ago ish we gave away some books on the Shop Talk Show. It's the only time we've ever done that before. Perhaps people remember. I think what we were trying to do is we were launching audio questions, and if you sent in an audio question, which we still like it when you do that, that would put you in the running to win a book, and that author of that book was you.
That's right. Yep. Happy days.
It was indeed. And that particular book was called Responsive Web Design with HTML5 and CSS3. Still available, I'm sure. Still highly poignant in today's industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising. I kind of thought we'd all be done with it by now, but it keeps on rocking.
Yeah. Thought that was a one and done kind of 2012 kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny because it's sort of, I feel, I suppose, for everybody who was sort of on board with it from the beginning, it can feel a bit like you've read everything you'd ever want to read about responsive web design, but
it's a
it's not going away.
No, and so this book covers the nerdy bits, how to get it done,
the CSS. I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's different when you're, I was kind of standing on the shoulders of giants, really. I mean, Ethan obviously started the whole thing, and I had sort of been working on a book before then that was mainly just about the HTML5 and the CSS3 side of things, and obviously his thing came along and it was like, well, I can't do normal web design anymore, it's got to include that. So it was a kind of amalgamation of the three, I suppose, and in a way kind of just, it was almost, if nothing else, it was going to be a reference book for me to sit there and sort of, so I could remember how I build stuff day to day.
Good. And so your original book morphed into this, and then that's when it ended up getting published.
Yeah. I mean, I'd done some work on it, and it was only really, it was a matter of sort of pulling it all together, because publishers are sort of funny. They want a kind of hook into, you know, what they're keen to see published and what they're not. And funnily enough, it was only when I mentioned that sort of angle that they were like, yes, we'll have a bit of that. So that was kind of good because it suited me.
Nice. Yeah, so it's definitely still a huge topic. I mean, to literally one of our sponsors, the Environments for Humans, I mentioned at the top of the show, today there's the Responsive Web Design Summit. It's an online thing going on. Tons of people talking about it. Dave's even doing it later. If you're listening to this on the podcast, sorry, it's through iTunes or whatever. Little late on that one, sorry, but we'll tell you about some other stuff you can go to. But just related to it, I saw somebody tweet a funny image today that was like the Boromir or whatever from... It was, one of the like white king dudes from Lord of the Rings. And it was one of those memes that it starts out with like, one does not simply, and then there's something below it. And it was like CSS their way to RWD. So, because it's just like becoming a bigger topic these days that CSS is a part of it, of course, but there's so much more to it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff I've looked at as well recently, it's sort of, I think the more complicated you get, you start looking at sort of res and that kind of thing. And I think certainly for the complete solution, I think it gets you, if you're just doing HTML, CSS, JavaScript, in a lot of instances, that's all you're going to need. But there's always occasions where you need that extra bit of firepower, in which case, sometimes you need a template on the server that, does something a little bit different.
That's just that's where we're at right now. So that's the old, not that the topic is old, but that's the book that you wrote a year ago. And now, we're just like our email thread was named. This is going to hopefully a yearly tradition that you have it's been a year later and you have a new book out. What's that new book all about?
So basically a couple of years ago, I'd been looking at CSS preprocessors because that's what I spend sort of 90% of my day doing. And, I found them. I could tell that SAS was the thing to go for over less. I preferred that, and I could see that it was more powerful. But
we'll wait for. We got a question about that one.
Oh right, okay. So it was basically a case of looking at the existing docs, and I found them a little impenetrable. I found it sort of a bit complicated to get up and running with it, and so it was always sort of in my mind that if I was going to show it to other people, I'd have to sort of. There's like a translation between what you read over there and what you pass on to somebody. So I just wanted to sort of write something that was the kind of thing, like if I was going to sit down with somebody fresh who'd never used SAS, I wanted to be able to sort of sit with them and easily talk them through it, but like I was sat there with them, not boggle them with terminology that they wouldn't be familiar with. So I wanted it for the sort of people that are used to HTML, CSS, but have not necessarily familiar with PHP or, any sort of more back-end programmatic languages, if you like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's simple. You just brew install Ruby and then CD to the directory that it's currently located in.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds sort of, because without those sort of people, obviously, we wouldn't have such amazing tools to use, but I'm a blunt object, and I need to have something that's sort of a bit more tell me like I'm a 3-year-old. That's kind of what I need. So if anybody's like me, that's obviously, hopefully it's going to be more suitable for them.
Heck yeah. So this is a big old thick book that covers all that. All the tools, starts from scratch, it's just the whole shebang.
I hope so, yeah. I mean, that certainly doesn't mean we don't get into things like loops and more complicated stuff and working with the terminal, but I'm hoping it's a kind of a steady ramp up into that, and you don't sort of feel like you've got to straight away crack open the terminal, like Dave says, run a bunch of commands just to get up and running. So I hope it sort of takes people right the way up.
That's fabulous. So maybe just for the audio reasons, is there a simple URL to get to it? Should they just go to benfrain.com and find it? We'll put a link in the show notes, but just for these, for the audio peeps.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's on Amazon and all the rest of it, but I'll just stick a link in the in the chat room now. If you go to, the website for the actual book is going to be sasandcompass.com, but I've yet to upload it yet because I'm still finishing the site. But obviously, by the end of the month, it'll be there.
Brand new.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's get into some drama. We got a few links I want to cover, but Dave, you chucked this in here.
Yeah,
I do know what it is. I was like, what is this?
I just added this drama. It was pretty hot. It's a week old, guys, but we weren't around last week, so it's just a little bit stale, but I'm sure you heard about it. 7 rules to managing creatives. I mean, creative but difficult people. Ben, did you come?
No, I've
this?
Not.
Okay, well,
there's the link in the chat room. So, go ahead.
You can summarize, Chris.
Well, I thought even the title was what people got mad about because it literally did say creative but difficult people in the title. I thought, I get it. Anyway, it uses the word creatives a lot in the thing, and even people are mad about that because you're like, that's not a type of person. It's just kind of a sucky word for a job, you know, like, what do you do for a living? I'm creative.
When did you start being creative? That's my favorite question. Probably as a kid.
Every one of these 7 things is kind of like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say.
Let's go through them all. So how to manage creatives. Step 1, spoil them and let them fail. True or false? True.
Spoil them and let them fail.
I'll take the first part.
Okay.
Spoil them. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely fine. Well, it's later contradicted later with pay them poorly, but we'll get to that later. Okay. Step 2, surround them by semi-boring people.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing that really inspires me more than just hanging out with boring people. That seems so insane. And I'm sure there's some, like, you know, it's pulled out of an ass, but there's some reason for this. There's something that pseudo makes sense about this. So where do they even go? The worst thing you can do to a creative employee is force them to work with someone like them. Maybe there is nothing reconcilable here. They would compete for ideas.
There's not a single fact in this whole thing. Yeah. Step 3 is only involve them in meaningful work, because creatives hate unmeaningful things.
Everybody else loves doing rubbish work, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's everyone but designers loves just crap work. Yeah. So
tedium.
Fact. All right. So far, so good. 3 for 3. Don't pressure them. You can't pressure creatives, give them deadlines or anything. He mentions Don Draper in this paragraph. So, of course, that's true. Step 5, pay them poorly. I mean, delete that. Don't overpay them. Nice save, dude.
Yeah, I don't get out of bed for less than 200K a day, so...
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it's like, don't overpay me to get out of bed, of course, but...
We can come to some agreement.
yeah, I'm pretty...
How does that help the industry to write something like that? You like when these come out of your fingers that you're like, you know what, this is good stuff.
Is this a proper, like, established... I mean, I don't read Harvard Business Review. Is this... You know, a sort of, it isn't like a joke site, it's not like The Onion or something.
Is this The Onion of business? No, this is like the premier business school publication.
Wow. So, in the US. And we wonder why there was a financial crisis.
Oh, is there a sad trombone here? We can. Step 6 was surprise them. Because creatives hate boredom, so surprise them with some things. I don't know what those things are. And the last step is make them feel important.
So, I'm all right with that as well.
It's like specific collusion, you know? Like they're not. It's what the subtext is. This is they're not important, but. If you can make them feel that way, you're really going to squeeze every last drop of usefulness out of there.
This article is just fascinating. I really want to meet somebody who has worked for him and get like the counterpoint on how much of a scumbag this guy is.
I like the editor's note at the bottom. Have you read that?
Oh, is it like... we updated it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like we don't mean everybody, just those people, you know who, wink wink.
Yeah. So this came like the creative community, designer community, really lampooned this, or they just were like, this guy's stupid, blah blah blah. There's a lot of vitriol fired back. What's interesting though is in my brain, I can actually imagine some of these people they're talking about. That's where I'm the double standard on this operation.
You can imagine someone being motivated by poor pay and surprises.
Well, not exactly that, but like they think they should be the CEO when they've never had a job more than like 2 months or whatever. You know, kind of humble them.
Indeed.
I don't know.
It's almost could read instead 7 rules for managing dicks. You know,
that
would sort of do it then. That would be fine.
Yep. Anyway.
Well, there's 700. If you can't get enough, there's 707 comments you can go peruse on this one. So indeed, it did light a fire anyway. I have a couple links that I would like to mention quickly because they relate to things that we've talked about on Chop Talk Show before. I think even last week or a couple weeks ago, whatever, we had a question of somebody wanted to get better at speaking or like, what's your best chance at, submitting a proposal and getting picked or whatever. If you want to up your game with speaking, a friend of ours, RL Balkan, which we should get on the show at some point. He's going to do like a one-time event in Brighton in the UK there, June 14th, 2013, called slideandstage.com. And he's a pretty good speaker, and he's just going to teach you how to get better at speaking. So I just thought I would throw that out there, not an official sponsor or anything, but since people have asked about how to be a better speaker, check out slideandstage.com if you want to take a class to get better at it. And the second one is, and this one is important to me because we've had this question literally like 50 times on Chop Talk Show. Because
we're question you can't stop asking.
Yeah. That's good. I want to try it like in a couple of different voices. Can you try it like in a deeper?
The question you keep asking.
That was better. We'll work on it though.
This summer.
It was about if you're working on a WordPress site. I mean, usually it's specifically WordPress, but of course this relates to any CMS. And we're big advocates of working locally and version control and all that type of stuff. Stop going commando and working on your live site. That's bad news, of course, right? So if you're working live, though, you know, once you've created your WordPress site, you know, you're blogging away and creating pages, and then you want to work on the site locally. All that stuff is missing. Like, you don't have your latest blog post. You don't have the latest pages that you published. And if you go to go publish them locally, then the IDs are probably different. And it's just weird. So you're like, oh, I guess I gotta go to the live site and export the database and then pull it in locally, but then make sure that the password is different and then go into the WP options table and make sure those URLs are the local version of them so all my URLs don't break and I can get to the admin screen and all that stuff. Syncing a database from live to local is a pain in the butt, and it's the pain in the butt on anything, but just because so many people use WordPress, the question that we get asked is often WordPress related. So there's this new plugin out called WP Migrate DB Pro. There's always been WP Migrate DB, which is nice. It's just for like exporting, importing. But the pro version of it does it without you doing any work. You install this plugin on your local WordPress and your live WordPress, and then it has like push and pull, and it gives you this like, you know, secret key in this URL that you hit, and you don't have to do anything. You can just do it from admin screen to admin screen, and it just slowly gets, not even that slowly. I mean, I guess it would be slow if it was a super huge database, like it would be on like CSS Tricks or whatever. But on a simple site, you know, it just takes like a minute or so, and it'll get the databases in sync, and it just does like HTTPS requests of little SQL, bits of SQL data, and it just runs them, and you know, you don't have to mess around with the WP options table or anything. It just like gets the DBs in sync. Admin screen to admin screen. Brilliant. Now we have a go-to answer on Chop Talk Show. How do you keep your databases in sync? Just use this plugin. $20.
Whoa.
I think I'll be buying that.
Yeah, works good.
It's cool. It's got like a little API key you copy and paste. Yeah,
right.
The API or how they kind of link up your local and the dev environment is pretty amazing. So
I didn't put this on CSS Tricks because I put a link on there, but I didn't put the discount code because I didn't want it to seem like all I do is like this is an unpaid sponsorship. I just think it's a cool tool, so I didn't want to put the discount code on there. I thought it would be weird, but I'll share it on Chop Talk Show. They sent me CSS Tricks, no dash or anything, is 20% off. Cool.
Awesome.
Looks pretty good. I don't know. Maybe they encrypt it with that API key, or maybe they just like it sends it across, and then if the request doesn't have that in it, the request is invalid, or it just secures it essentially.
Yeah, pretty cool. I think it's gonna help a lot of people out, myself included.
Yeah. So I know how to export a database, and I don't cherish it. You know.
Yep.
All right.
But Chris, I'm gonna let you do it first. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay. Do a screencast of it.
Well, let's jump into some questions. The first question comes from Steve Barman. He writes in and asks, what kind of candy do responsive designers eat? Rem and M's.
Waka waka waka.
Rem and M's.
Hey, waka waka. Waka waka waka.
Mm-hmm. Just saying.
That's keep them coming. All right. Next question comes from Lucas DeChow. Writes in and says, even though we can nest media queries in SCSS and SAS, wouldn't it just be easier to implement a media query within the main style sheet than import individual modules into subdirectories? Example, at media min width 50m bracket. At import desktop type biography.scss/other.
So you can nest media queries in SCSS. It's one of the awesomest features there is in SAS, I think, because it puts without having to, you don't have to like rewrite the selector again somewhere else in the CSS file. Let's say you're changing the width of something. You might say width equals 25% and then write a media query for a small screen device. And then that width becomes 100% because it was a module, but now it's full. And now those two values are right next to each other, width 25% and width 100%. See, there's no disconnect in your authoring. They're right next to each other. You can see them. You know, do we all agree that's a pretty cool feature of SAS?
Yes.
It's my favorite.
But he's asking though, like one of the things that people don't like about that is how it litters the output with different little media queries. That's a separate issue. But Lucas is just asking, but what if like we can still separate, we can still like use some SAS features here. If we just have a media query at the bottom of our global, let's say, and instead of like writing all of the media query stuff inside of there, you just like import another chunk of SCSS and you just put it in there. I mean, mm-hmm. I you know, of course you can do that. I'm not sure if I totally understand the question. Like, is it better to do it that way? Or like, I guess we should talk about our preferred ways of handling this kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess he's asking like, why wouldn't you just break up desktop typography into its own kind of partial that you only pull in when necessary. And getting that bundling effect. I think for me, and Ben, I want to hear, you're the author. You're riding the royalty train, but so maybe you have good advice. But for me, that seems like managing I would rather manage all typography in one kind of module, like straight down. But that's just me. Ben,
yeah, I think I'm pretty much the same. I mean, I tend to sort of now, I try to make sort of each visual element like, I think of it like a module. So what I particularly like about the SAS way of doing things is that you can define anything that's particular to that thing there and then in that module. You don't have to break out, you know, and like the old school way of doing it is, you know, right down at the bottom of your CSS, you do all your separate media queries and all the things that needed to change. And I always found that a real pain because I was having to sort of go back up the style sheets or into another style sheet, copy, paste, and amend. Whereas this way, you can have your one block of code and everything that relates to that thing is in one place. You know, it's in one blob. And then the flip side of that is obviously people say, but, you know, the CSS is ugly on the other side and all the rest of it. And I'm a big advocate of if you need to give that CSS to somebody else, then sure, maybe that's not the best way of doing it. But I don't care what that CSS is going to look like 90% of the time, because the only person that's going to read it, not even a person, is the server. So if nobody's ever going to look at that CSS, if it's just going straight to production, I couldn't give a jot about what the CSS looks like. It just doesn't even feature. I think when you start using it, it's important to look at it because you want to know, you know, that you're not compiling absolute gibberish. But once you've got a handle on it, I mean, I don't even look at the CSS anymore. You know, in comparative page weight, you know, your CSS is always tiny compared to everything else anyway. So, yeah, that's I favour authorship over, you know, purity of compiled code any day.
Right. So that's a great point. I mean, I even have a talk right now that I'm doing that's just that it has that as its overall theme, is that the authorship is the most important part here, and whatever makes that most comfortable, that's great, and who cares about what the compiled CSS is? I mean, you can care a little bit, of course, because it matters, because that's what the browser reads, but like, don't focus too much on that. And so, Lucas, if as an author you like this more, then do it. So I don't want to say that your idea isn't good here, because I honor you, the author. If this works for your project and you like it, and you like breaking off your little assets into little tiny .scss chunks, and then you like load them and media queries later, and that just is totally working for you, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I don't think you get quite the authoring conveniences you get as if you put little media queries all over here and just kind of adjust little values as needed. I like this less on my projects, but if you like it more, you're the author, go for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like to think of it in terms of horcruxing yourself. You're taking one single typography file and casting a horcrux and splitting your soul across three files. Think about that.
Yeah. And then what if one of them gets lost?
Or Harry Potter freaking steals it? Whatever.
Oh, they should do a retelling of Harry Potter where he's the bad guy. You're like, dude, stop messing with those horcruxes. Hamish Square Monkey, that's literally this last name. It's spelled kind of awesomely, and I think it's basically the coolest last name ever. How do you compile SAS server-side? My workflow is pretty old school. I set up a testing server online and use Coda for development, and it's built-in FTP to send changes up to the server. I'm sure we've all been there, hey? Yeah. My CSS is compiled by the terminal, and I set it up. So, like, okay, he works... A lot of times he just works in Coda and just builds his sites. But if he's working totally locally, he uses terminal to do, you know, SAS watch or whatever, or compass watch and watch files. So he knows how SAS works locally and using the terminal to compile files or whatever. But that doesn't help him with his old school Coda workflow. Because when he makes a change to a file, it might trigger locally and compile the thing, but it doesn't like auto upload then the compiled CSS. Or would it? Because it's just in Coda there, and you've made a change, so it...
Coda doesn't do that, does it? But I know that if you're using Sublime, there's Sublime FTP, and I particularly like that, because if you have to use that workflow where you're not using Git or whatever to send stuff up, as soon as you save the SAS file, it compiles into the CSS, and then it knows that it's changed and uploads it straight away. So it just saves you that extra step.
Oh, that's awesome. So Coda, there's no configuration, there's no setting in Coda that says, hey, you're already watching this folder. Can you just, if anything ever changes, just FTP it up? It doesn't work. You have to, like, trigger an actual, like, command S save in Coda for it to trigger its FTPE thing.
Yeah, that's definitely right.
Mm. On the file, yeah. Mm. I thought Coda 2, it has SAS support built in.
or something to some degree. But I don't know why it doesn't do that. I'm looking into like SaaS plugins now for Coda.
Yeah, you would think that somebody would be able to do this. And I know, and the chat room is hard at work here with all the different things that you can do to compile SaaS, which there's just a million of them, which is so awesome. You know, like this world is like whatever you want to process your SaaS, go for it. Anyway, but apparently Coda's not one of them, unless we can find something for him.
Yeah, you might have to break up with Coda. I don't know. That's tough.
But I mean, that from what he said, that sort of indicates that he's iterating changes that are then going. And I'm always a bit sort of dubious of that. Anyway, you try and get away from that, don't you? So that you do it all locally. You wait till it's all as good as it's going to be, and then send it in one big go. You know, rather than continually iterating, because that's a surefire way to get white screened.
Yeah, good point.
The very first part of this question, though, is how do you compile SaaS server side? And you totally can do that. Yeah. You can just how you can install, because servers are just computers, right? And you can install Compass on your own computer and SaaS on your own computer. You can install it on a server too, so that on the command line of the server, you can also do all the commands to compile SaaS and whatever.
So do you think he means just sending the SaaS file up when he saves the SaaS file? Is that what he means?
Maybe. That would be cool. I mean, that's certainly a way to do it. I doubt it, though. But maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Send up the SaaS file, detect a change, server compiles it.
Exactly, or not even detect a change. I mean, just have, yoursite.com/admin stuff, and then have a little button on there that where you click it runs the, it runs your little build or whatever. I mean, there's a million ways to do it. Yes, it's possible.
I want to say there's if he's on WordPress, there's a WordPress plugin that does this now. It's like just auto compiles all SaaS and stuff like that. So check that out, maybe.
I saw Assets Minify, which is pretty good, which just does it through the, WP and Q style. So, if it senses that file is different once, it will process it and then cache it, And if that file is different the next time, it'll check cache before it runs. So it doesn't just run it every single time, but it can tell if it's different the second time, and then it will process it. Yeah, look pretty good. All right.
Okay. Next question is from Craig Frisbee. We're 100% on these last names here. Question for Ben Frain. If I use Coda 2, will I be cooler than someone who uses Sublime Text? Or am I panicking over nothing?
Yeah, I think I know Mr. Frisbee. I'm pretty sure that... Throw away that text editor. Just crack open a blank text page. That's the way to go. That's pure.
It is pure, isn't it? Well, syntax highlighting is for losers.
Basically. Yeah, I mean, you should know that stuff by now. Who needs spell checkers?
Yeah. Okay. You're panicking over nothing.
I miss the old days when I managed my braces by hand.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't miss that one bit.
I love closing tags.
We've talked about this before. I think we talked about code editors for real. I don't, I can't even tell the level of fakeness of this question or whatever, but we did in a previous episode. Just the last one, I think, go over text editors a little bit. So let me do a sponsor quick, and then we'll get on to some. We have a bunch of them. The more we can do, the better, right? Everybody agrees the more questions we get to there. lynda.com/shoptalk. That's the URL that you have to go to. You get a free week if you do this. They have over 77,000 videos on the site, which is crazy. After your free week, it starts at $25 a month. So it's already super cheap. It's not like you're getting a free week and then you have to pay them like $13,000, like the course of like 2 years at community school to do this. It's super cheap. It's like almost, for something that's as valuable as your education, it might as well be free. They have all kinds of classes on this web design stuff that we talk about all the time, including programming and backend stuff that we don't talk about so much, but also stuff that we never talk about, like photography and, 3D and video and animation and stuff. So all that stuff is on Lynda. The breadth of learning material is super wide. It's all tangential to tech, though. And you know, and then it works super good on your, you know, on mobile devices. So like their little iPhone and iPad apps are pretty nice for, you know. So if you like to like learn on the train or whatever, you can do that. So Lynda.com/shoptalk, get a free week. Pretty sweet. We got an audio one. David Paulson.
Oh, God. I wasn't queuing it up.
That's cool. It's fine.
What was I doing?
I'll just whistle. I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, here. Let's go. Let's do this.
Yep.
Hi, guys. My name is David Paulson from Sweden. I have a question for you about pre-compressors. I've been using Less for the last year or something, and hearing you guys talk a lot about SAS with Compass. And I want to hear your thoughts about maybe switching over. What are the main benefits, and what's the easiest way to get started? Thanks for a good show, and bye.
All right,
Ben,
here
you
it
gotta
is.
Have this one.
It's the throwdown: SAS versus Less.
I mean, I sort of think use whatever you're happy using, but for me personally, it sort of came down to the fact that Less was one guy, as far as I remember, and when I looked at SAS, there was more people involved in it, and Compass, which I don't think people necessarily realise how much Compass brings to the party, and that was one of the main reasons I went with SAS, was because of a lot of the sort of helpers like how to create data URIs and things like that, which there may now be in Less, I don't know, but they were the sort of things that made me, you know, choose that team, if you like. But I would say to people,
I doubt,
you know,
it, because it's JavaScript, and
yeah,
go on.
Yeah, well, yeah. I was just going to say, I think people should just use what they're comfortable with. You know, whatever gets you through the day.
Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with that point. Is that they're just happy that people are, you know, using them at all, because they do. They are such a huge boon to productivity and kind of decomplicating sites.
I mean, having said all that, SAS is loads better to use that.
Yeah. I wonder if Dave, do you ever feel bad about, I mean, we never talk about Less. Do we present a too one side of a view of the preprocessor party, or do you even care?
I'm struggling. Struggling to care. No. my big thing is so this week, Chris, you and I were at TXJS, mm-hmm. which is a JavaScript conference held here in Austin, Texas. And there's a lot of people in the Node community who use Less because they're running Node, and Less is built on Node. So it's like super fast, like orders of magnitude faster. And I think that's kind of maybe a motivation for a lot of people to use Less, is that it's already in their lingua franca, if you will. But yeah, I came
from like some high level stuff though. Like
I came from like a Ruby side, and it was like, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm just going to use this because all the Ruby guys use it.
That's a great counter argument though. But how often do you look at the source of Less or SAS? Because to me, it's zero times ever.
For Less?
Either one.
Yeah.
I don't look at the source. I don't really care what it's written in. It doesn't factor into my flow almost at all. Especially if you're not doing a lot of these fancy server-side compilation stuff, and you just use, like a lot of people I know, just use something like CodeKit. Like that, whatever it's written mm-hmm. in is totally abstracted from you.
Yeah.
Anyway. But it does have implications deeper than that, though. Like the fact that SAS is in Ruby means that it opens up a lot of possibilities that aren't there in JavaScript, like file access. Like I don't think there can be a data URI converter thingy in Less, because it just doesn't. I don't think JavaScript has the same access to your file system that Ruby does.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
Unless it really is a Node. True. Is it actually a Node? Less?
Yeah, well, like the one where you say like script less.js or whatever, that one does not that has no access to the file system. But if you're running it properly, like compiling from the command line, that would be going through Node. And you'd have access to image magic and stuff
like that. Yeah, you'd have all the same stuff that Les would, I guess. But that seems funny. Then why don't they have, like, they don't, like, there's no such thing as, like, a real proper loop in Les. There kind of is, because you can write, like, a mix in with a guard, and the guard kind of, like, then calls itself. You can write, like, kind of a reciprocal mix in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, some kind of way to do a loop, but it's really not great. It's not like in SAS where you just write a loop and it's a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's things like that. It's that make Compass possible in SAS, and as far as I understand it, rather impossible in Les. It just doesn't have like the language power to make something like Compass possible. You'll find a big pack of Les mixins around or whatever that kind of do some CSS3 stuff, but they don't have the chutzpah.
Ben may have an opinion, but I feel like Compass is the like wham bam, that's why you'd go. That's why you'd switch.
I mean, the analogy I made in the book is sort of like if you took SAS to West Coast Customs, the first thing they'd add is Compass.
Yeah, I love absolutely. That. Or an alligator head.
Like,
yeah.
Silver.
But big totally. Speakers.
No, that's it. It's like they're just gonna, it's everything you need to get started, and it's like zero cost, it's free, and it's awesome. But
and there's things like if you do image sprites, like if you have to, I mean, I do those less and less now because of SVG and the like, but you know, image sprites are such a bind to do normally, and Compass, it's just so easy. It takes, you know, you need an hour to put aside to get your head around it at first, but then it's just so easy and perfect that you can't imagine not having it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to leave with one thing. All the cool kids use Stylus. All right. And I think that's true. Like all
but
my
what
friends.
If, I mean, I don't want to leave it just quite yet, though. Although I do, okay. too. Some of the uber coolest people are using Stylus. And there's things to like in Stylus for sure. Like the invisible mixins or whatever are pretty cool.
Invisiskins, is that what they're called?
I think so.
Invisaligns?
Yep. In so what if, though, here's one of the obvious ones that people mention all the time. Les doesn't have extend, and extend is awesome. But that's the kind of thing that, like, apparently they're on their way to it or something, or they just need to, like, get a pull request. That's what I've heard at one point. I don't know the 100% truth of all of this. But what if tomorrow Les were to start having really good extend, too? Would that shift the balance a lot or not? I mean, I guess it doesn't really help with the Compass thing. But like, I just feel like this hasn't shaked out entirely yet. In that it's a little premature to like declare a winner necessarily, nor do we need to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that perhaps the case is, though, that if you're running with SAS and Compass right now, there'd have to be a point where that's not doing something that you needed for you to look elsewhere. Like at the minute, I don't feel like I even need to look elsewhere because I've got everything I need. But if in, you know, a year, 2 years' time, development slows there and picks up in less, that's maybe a time when people would be more inclined to look elsewhere. I mean, what do you think? Do you find when you're using SAS and Compass that you keep hitting
like
a wall
writing
of things you need?
No, I don't. But I also am sick of writing at include every 2 seconds. Which all the other ones solve that with a one character thing. And if anybody's listening who has control over this, I launch my little tirade on it once in a while. But yeah, everybody agrees that plus is better for this. I don't think there's anybody's anti plus sign. Let's do that. New version of SCSS plus sign. Anyway.
Oh, that would be good. Big nuts.
That's my favorite one.
Cool. So next. We all decided Stylus is the way to go. Next question comes from Andy McCormick, and it's an audio question. Here we go.
Hey guys, I've heard a lot about using a Git workflow over FTP for web design and development. I've always just used a local host using WAMP to design and develop, and then FTP the files to the live server when ready to go live. Likewise, for future updates, I modify on the localhost and then FTP the changes to the live site. Or, yes, I know, I just work on the live site directly. How can I use a Git workflow while retaining the ability to work offline? Thanks a lot. Love the show.
So that last sentence is the key that probably seems weird to some people, and maybe that will get at the heart of this. How can I use Git workflow while retaining the ability to work offline? Andy, you can't use it any other way, right? If you're using a version control system, that's all about working offline, working locally, and then, you know, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even, you know, if you've not used Git before, I suppose, like that, I remember the first times I used to use it, I would just do the version control locally and then still FTP up. You know, if that's the bit, because sometimes that can be difficult if you're trying to get the servers to talk, you know, and push-pull and all that sort of craziness. That can take a bit of getting your head around. So if you if you've not done it before, I would just say use the version control locally, get the most out of version control there, still do the FTP, and then when you're comfortable with all that, then you can sort of jack it up a level.
That's a good, fair way to do that, I would think. It seems slightly weird to me. Any kind of version control doesn't give you free deployment. Deployment being the part about, you know, getting your things to the web, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, FTP is. It's all about, that's just the protocol. That's just what moves the files. But, you know, Coda has that built in, and, you know, that's deployment essentially. Manually dragging files with an FTP program, that is just it's technically deployment. It's like the ghettoest deployment you can have. But yeah. We've mentioned on the show many times that go ahead, you have something, Dave.
I was going to say the chat room's recommending FTPLOY, FTPLOY, like FTP deploy. And it's kind of a deploy to GitHub, push stuff to your server. And I think all you what's that?
It's a web app.
Yeah, it's a web app. And I think you put your information in there and it steals password.
I have seen this. It's good. It's a Beanstalk competitor, and Beanstalk isn't the only one that does this either. But that's the one I've been using for a long time, just because they've been around forever and it just works. This one looks cool because it's free during beta, although it probably won't be free forever. And if it is, it will shut down. So you know, you're going to have to pay for this eventually. So it looks nice, though. The point being that they probably host but it works with GitHub and Bitbucket. That's kind of awesome because Beanstalk works with Beanstalk, you know, like Beanstalk hosts the Git repo, whereas a lot of people are like, I wish it was on GitHub and I want the deployment, and GitHub doesn't do deployment. So this would be like Beanstalk, only you could keep your stuff on GitHub. That's cool.
Yeah.
Looks good, guys.
I would like to use this.
Thanks, chat room.
I would like to use this. This looks good. Anyway, yeah, there's kind of a million different options. I use a rake file, which rsyncs all my data, which is like, it's kind of like syncing. It is syncing, but it's sort of like FTP, but it's automated, right? So I don't have to like manually upload individual files. I really love that and recommend it. And if I knew how to set up an SSH key, it would be a lot easier. But instead, I have to find my password every single time. Mm-hmm. So it's good. One day, I'll know how to set up SSH keys.
This has come up a lot. This is a very focused show. Let's pick one that's totally different next.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's after the sponsor, right? So I'll just do environments for humans right quick. CSS DevConf, and I think you can just literally go to that, CSSDevConf.com, and it will redirect you to 2013.CSSDevConf.com, which really all conferences should do that. You should year out your thing. So if you ever do it again, you just make a new subdomain that's the new year, and that way you've like maintained the last year's site too, so it doesn't just die. I like that. Good work. All conferences should have a year subdomain. Anyway, the big message this time is, so if you want to go, which is awesome because it's one of these conferences that's all about one topic only, which is so cool. especially something that's as specific as CSS. So every talk that you go to is going to be like, you know, focused on it. You're gonna come out learning a bit more than you would have. Shut up, Chris. Get to the point.
Come on.
The point is that if you want to speak at it, that's still possible. To this moment, you go there and click a big blue button that says submit session, and you fill out your title and what track you think it will be in and how difficult it will be, and write an abstract and stuff. And they did this last time at CSS DevConf 2, and they do a totally blind voting session on it where people go and they read the titles. And they, there's two times that you vote. One time you vote like just on the abstract-y stuff, and then one time you vote just on the, I don't know, they have some like scientific way to pick things for it. And what it ended up was is a really wide variety of speakers and topics, and it was awesome. And they're just going to do that again. So it's sure that it's going to end up pretty cool. So it's at the Stanley Hotel, which is near the Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. Early bird tickets are under $400. It's not a particularly expensive conference. So,
anyway. I want to say we were talking to somebody this week, Chris, and they were like, oh, I want to speak at a conference. And I really like CSS. And it was just like, dude, There's a whole conference just for this. They're accepting speakers right now. You should apply. So, everyone head over there.
Environments for Humans. Yep. It's going to be great. And you got plenty of time. I don't know about the submitting the thing, but you have plenty of time to decide if you want to go. In fact, you don't have that much time to submit your talk idea. It's April 25th. So this show should be out before that. But if you're listening to it on iTunes, you probably want to get on it like today-ish. All right.
Awesome.
Patrick Marcial asks, I heard you talking about breaking up SAS files and partials and the different schemas that people use. It is slightly annoying to me that there isn't an agreed upon way to approach this, especially when I see people that don't break out their SCSS files into anything more than just one giant file. I haven't ever really heard anyone talk about Jonathan Snook Smack's principles to SAS either, which is puzzling to me because it seems like this kind of thing would be perfect for that. In theory, I think this method would help midgetate specificity problems and would work well for large group projects in SAS. So what do you think, Ben? Patrick wants to know like organizational stuff and like why isn't there any standards in place here?
I mean, I think the lack of standards is probably the most positive part about it, because you can use a different approach depending on what you're building. For example, with a sort of a normal sort of average site, I tend to split. I'll have a partial for the layout, so that's kind of where the grid would live, and then another one which is my modules, which would be all the sort of little modules of code. One for placeholders, one for mixins, another one for fonts. But it just depends on, you know, by the same token, if I'm, you know, in work, if we're building something where I need to deliver CSS to another department, then I would just put it all in that one file. And the fact that I could do that is great, because I've not got to adhere to something specific. What's good about it is once you sort of get your head around a way that works for you, that then use it that way. You know, I'm not sort of prescriptive about how people should use it.
Well, that openness is a good thing. It doesn't, it's not opinionated in how you want to structure.
Yeah, and I think it's different. You know, you've got to separate that from how you would architecture CSS. Obviously, that's a different thing altogether. I mean, there's a lot of talk of, you know, sort of BEM and OOCSS and all that sort of stuff. And I don't subscribe to either of one of those, you know, to the letter. I sort of do my own thing, but it's along those sort of lines. And so that allows me, you know, it facilitates me doing whatever I want to do, and that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah. I like that. I'm not sure how organizing the project would match with SMACs. Although we were just at TXJS, and Nicole Sullivan talked about SAS plus OOCSS. So look for that online when that comes out, because it was specifically about how those things to go together. And SMACs and OOCSS are very similar in concept. I don't even know the difference, really. I feel like we've talked about it before, but it's just, I don't think it matters very much. Both of them, to me, in my mind, mean do really smart stuff with identifying patterns and states and then use class names for them. That's
yeah, I mean, it's funny because I sort of, no matter how many times I go back and look at them, I never feel like I've really got it. You know, like some people rave about it, and I'm sort of like, am I missing something here? And there's certain elements I've taken from it. You know, this idea of sort of having very low specificity and all that sort of stuff is great. But this sort of idea of having a massive library full of patterns that you may or may not use, I'm not so into that. But I feel like I'm going to be a bit of a pariah for saying that.
I don't know that that's what they advocate, though. I'm not sure either, though, because I'm sure we're all very standard. I'm sure everybody here and everybody in this entire chat room right now, we all probably don't have a 100% understanding of what these things mean. Yeah. Modularity, specificity, identifying patterns.
Yeah, and part of the sort of, I think that the more you get into this sort of stuff, the real sort of, if there's a skill to take from it, it's that you need to be able to sort of analyze all these things, that there's so much sort of information, you can feel like you're drowning at times. And a lot of the skill is in seeing what's going to actually solve a problem for you and what isn't.
Yeah. I linked up something here. I'll put it in the show notes, but the SaaSway.com is a blog all about SaaS, and there is a blog post there, how to structure a SaaS project, that looks pretty smart to me. So the main part being that I like it when my global or my, you know, the files that represent, that are going to get compiled into what turns out to be a CSS file that is actually loaded on the site, not a partial, but the real ones that are probably going to go have a one-to-one relationship with the thing that's going to be loaded on the site, should have no CSS in them at all. They're just like little table of contents for the partials that they include. I like that. When I open those files, I'm like, oh, I see. It's just loading this set of partials. I think that's sweet. And that's what this is. It looks like it advocates a bit here, but with a bit more organization.
Yeah. I think, yeah. You guys already said everything. I feel like the base and layout part of SMAX you can do, but I don't think you want all your modules in one file. I guess he wants them to put into groups of partials or something. But anyhow, I think you're going to want to split up like base into reset, typography, or maybe that's even into the layout side of thing, or grid. You know, you want... There's three components inside each of those things you recommended. So
you can also, if you've got a lot of sort of low-level partials, you know, if it's sort of library files like OOCSS sort of stuff, there's always you can just do the SAS globbing, which is where you just stick them all in one folder, and then you can just do, you know, import library slash asterisks, and that will bring in all the partials from there in one go.
Does it do that?
Yeah, but the only thing you need to be careful about is that it brings them in alphabetically. That's why I say it needs to be stuff that's very low level, and you know it's not order dependent. But as long as that's the case, you know, like if you have
you
sort of
name them 1, 2, 3.
Four. Yeah, of course you could. Yeah, but yeah, that's one way to do it. So you don't need to have like 50 lines of imports. You know, you can just have one import statement that brings in a whole folder.
Yeah, that's sweet. Yeah, because yet again, import. Why can't we use plus? Just kidding. I know it's different.
All right. What do you want to do, Chris? One more?
Let's
you got
just
time
do
then?
This last John Wooten one here.
John Wooten called in and asked the following.
Hey, guys. I love the show. The sound effects board is probably my favorite, followed by the rapid fire episodes, of course. My question is, I'm brand new to SAS. The first project I used for SAS, I loved it, totally loved how I could use the beginning features that I was messing around with. Just made my life so easy as far as making that CSS file went. And I used CodeKit with it, which is just a no-brainer. However, someone who works for the client, who knows a little CSS, went in without my knowledge and tweaked the CSS file on the production server and added some CSS to it. And so now I'm trying to figure out a way where I can take that compiled CSS file and somehow put it back, maybe convert it back to SCSS so I can keep working on that file in the future and have it in my original SAS layout that I had. Thanks so much, guys, and keep it up. Love the show.
Okay, so John had a cowboy sneak into his server, hot edit some CSS, and now he's kind of boned. What should he do, Ben?
I mean, I suppose the smartest thing to... I mean, there's no easy tool that I'm aware of that's going to, you know, reverse that. I would probably start by just diffing the files, you know, and there's a thing built into OS 10, if you haven't got a specific diff tool, and just look at what's changed first of all. Obviously, if it's lots and lots, you've got a far bigger problem than if it's just one or two lines. Yeah, that'll be my first port of call. And if it's really bad, just cry, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't, I mean, that sucks. That's just a sucky position to be in. And it, you know, and I'm sure people, you know, don't take this as some limitation of SAS. I mean, it just is not, you know, this just isn't done, you know. However you got it to the server in the first place, you should continue that workflow.
Well, it'd be the same case if he'd just uploaded, if he'd handwritten CSS and uploaded it and somebody else had done that. It would be the same thing. That's not particular to SAS.
Right. Or maybe have a file where you write it down, a local file, be like, oh, I had to go in there and cowboy some stuff up. I better write it down in my, you know, maybe, so, you know, Harry Roberts has a post on CSS Wizardry like yesterday or today or something, this, the shame.css file, which we talked about on Shop Talk a while back ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could have like shame.txt and you just explain what change you had to make, or it's just this little repository of like little changes that you made so that you know that you can go back and change it in your SCSS as well. Or ideally, like at some, maybe I just didn't listen closely enough to the workflow, but those files made it to the server once that were pre-processed. Why don't you make the change in the pre-processed file, process it again, and upload the entire CSS file, you know? Wouldn't that be the right workflow?
Yeah, I would think I would maybe make a copy of your screen CSS or whatever you're calling it and call it a.scss, grab their CSS and put it into a file called b.scss, compile both of those to CSS and find the diffs. Like expanded CSS. So, and then find the diffs between those two. And then you just, I don't know, then go fix your SAS. Easy as pie. Diffing. Welcome to the wonderful world.
Of course, the real, you know, like I feel like you're looking for a hand slapping, John. So consider your hand slap. Just don't do that. Don't go cowboy.
Yeah. I wonder, he said someone who works for the client. I wonder if it was him. I wonder if he's
it's a guilt thing, right? Yeah.
Went a little cowboy. Yeah. I don't know.
The old asking for all right. A friend.
Well, I think that's all we have time for. Ben Frain, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people don't know or don't follow you already, how can they get in touch with you and buy your books?
The easiest thing is just go to the website, which is benfrain.com. Same handle on Twitter, Ben Frain. I'm not on anything else because life's too short. Thank you very much for having me, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure.
We really appreciate it, and looking forward to the book hitting the shelves. Everybody, thanks for coming out and listening in the Shop Talk Show chat room. You guys really checked our facts today. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Buy some stuff in the store. There's some new stuff headed that way. A new image, at least. So that's all I got. Shop
Talk
Show.
Well, I don't know if we even mentioned it, but it was just that, you know, there's girls' cuts now. So if you're a female Shop Talk Show listener, you don't have to buy a unisex t-shirt. You can buy a true woman's cut shirt. So that's what's there now. which is cool. There you go. Yep. And yeah, and thanks again, Ben. It's so cool to be able to talk about SaaS for such a long time.
Hey, would you say that this was maybe a deep dive into SaaS? I think it was. I can't stop. Somebody stop this.
ChopTalkShow.com.